Christians. But, you know, once we had, you know, the advent of printing, you know, now you have the opportunity to print books. Now you have the opportunity to teach people to read. And so by the time you're into the 1600s, you know, the English society is transitioning from a rural oral tradition in reference to legal matters. Now you're beginning to get into, you know, now we're going to have books. And back in those days, you know, at the time of the Revolution, there was a guy by the name of Blackstone, who was a law professor. And he wrote a noteworthy set of books that became the basis for both in England and in America, you know, a good summary of the law, so to speak. Blackstone's commentary evidenced, you know, it encapsulated the common law of England. And you can get, you know, I bought maybe one back when I was in law school, I bought a very nice set of books called Blackstone's Commentaries, and I've used it ever since. You know, you can trace, if you want to see the development of things like these rules, you know, I can trace a particular rule that we've got today that we use, I can trace it back to Blackstone's Commentaries. So Blackstone's Commentaries, you know, was a set of books, but I think there were four volumes to it. But, you know, today when you can get out it, you can download original versions on the internet. You can download some prints of Blackstone's Commentaries printed in the 1800s and early 1900s. You know, you can, I think over there, there are some real good sources on the internet where you can download them. So if you want to see what the overall law, you know, the statutory and common law traditions of England back in the 1700s, if you want to see what that was like, just start reading Blackstone's Commentaries. Yeah, there you got it, Joe. And since, you know, what you have today, you know, if you want to buy a real nice set of books, there's various law publishers that will reprint Blackstone's Commentaries. And, you know, if you go back into the old stuff, you know, if you're reading stuff that's printed back in the 1700s, you know, you will see their odd, their different ideas of punctuation that they had back then that are different from today. For example, if you had a word that had two S's together, you know, one S, an S in the middle of a word looked like an F. And, you know, then the second S would be like the S we use today. But, you know, those are little things you can see when you're looking at a real old, you know, an original version of Blackstone's Commentary or anything that's, you know, back from that period of time. Now, back in those days, we didn't have cases like we have today. You know, when the printing press came out, and, you know, the records of the English monarchs were going to be memorialized by means of books. You know, you have some early books that were written and printed in the 1600s. And those are some of the beginning cases of, you know, printed and made available to law students and the public. You know, the first cases that ever came into print. You know, Joe, you can, I don't think we need to pull them up, but, you know, you can go back and read some of those old cases and you can see how the civil and criminal justice system operated back then. Today, what we have is a whole lot different. Our society is different from feudal, rural England. Our society today is different from rural colonial America. Our society today is different from the rural American society at the time of the revolution. You know, at the time of the revolution, there were what, 3 million people here in America in the 13 colonies. You know, today, 3 million people can be found in one city. You know, one city can have multiples of 3 million. You know, a state can have, you know, I think Wyoming might not have 3 million people, but a place like Alabama, I think we got about 6 million people. So things are a lot different from those. Our legal system is different from the one that we had a mere 200 years ago. Our legal system is based upon the system that we had back then, but our legal system has changed to meet the growing needs of a growing population and a population that is a lot more complex. It's not rural, it's modern day America. Now let's get around to the rules of civil procedure. And I want to spend maybe about 5 or 10 minutes and then invite those that are listening to the program to, if we get the time, you know, just start, download it and look through it. Now, a lawsuit today is started much like a lawsuit was started, you know, 500 years ago. A document gets filed with a court. That document is called, you know, a lot of people call it a lawsuit. You know, specifically, we call it a complaint. You file a complaint, and in the complaint, you write out your claim against the other party, the party that you're suing. And then you deliver that complaint to a court, and a court that's set up by law. Now, once that complaint gets filed, you know, back then, you know, in rural England, as well as today, that complaint, which summarizes a cause of action by a party named the plaintiff. The plaintiff is suing the defendant. He deposits his complaint in a court, and he's wanting to bring the opposing party, the defendant, before that court so that these claims between these parties, two or more, can be adjudicated. Now, once that, today, you know, lawyers or parties type up a lawsuit. And, you know, there's a lot of pro ses that do it. You know, just this last week, I have a friend of mine, you know, he bought some landscaping materials, bricks, and didn't get what he bought. And so he's suing the garden company that sold him these defective bricks. And he's just doing it on his own. And you can do it on your own. And the courts today are set up that way. You know, if you want to know, if you have a complaint against somebody else, you know, it's not difficult for you to sit down and look at the rules and get on the internet and do some looking around, and you can find out how to do it. Now, once you prepare a complaint and send it to a court, then you've got to summons the party that you're suing. And there's a piece of paper that goes on the front of the lawsuit, the complaint, and it's directed to the defendant. And a party goes out and lays those pieces of paper on the defendant. That's called serving process by means of a summons. And that's the way a lawsuit gets started. Well, Claire says there is no more observance of the rule of law. Well, I will say that the more that we have people that have at least a basic understanding of the legal system, the less the legal system and those that are involved with it can escape by, you know, doing some of the things that can be achieved, carried out, because people don't know. The great solution to the problem is to educate people, and then a lot of these problems will be addressed. Now, if you want to know something about the process by which lawsuits are handled, there's no better way than to just sit down and take a look at something like the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Now, you can also download, you know, here in Alabama, you know, I type in Alabama Rules of Civil Procedure in the search engine, and boom, they pop up. You know, I know that they're there. You know, and I no longer really use printed rule books. When I'm doing something, boom, I just find it on the internet. Now, after a lawsuit is typed up, placed into a court, is served on the defendant by means of a summons, there's typically a period of time in which the party that's being sued must respond to the lawsuit by filing a responsive pleading with the court where the case is filed. And that is governed by these rules. You know, in some courts, you got 30 days to file a responsive pleading, like an answer. Some places you only have 14 days. Some places you only have 20. You know, there are differing time frames, and you can find out those time frames by looking at the local rules. Now, in addition, once you get a lawsuit filed, then, you know, back the years ago, let's go back 150 years ago, a civil case 150 years ago here in Alabama, you know, there wasn't anything known as discovery. You couldn't, you know, you would file your lawsuit and, you know, the issues would get framed by these pieces of paper that are found in a court. And then when trial starts, you know, you really don't know anything. Unless you've gone out and done your own investigating, you really don't know much about the other side's case. Well, that is no longer the case. Today, we have things known as discovery. Now, Joe, let's go down to Rule 26. Disclosures and discovery. You know, years ago, you know, let's say that 100 years ago, you wanted to get some information from regarding a party essential for your lawsuit, you'd have to file a separate lawsuit to do something like take a deposition. Well, that proved to be burdensome. So when the rules of procedure, civil procedure, were developed, there was a decision made, and I think a very wise decision, contrary to a lot of people out there that don't know what they're talking about. A very wise decision was made to provide discovery rules inside these rules. So discovery is doing things like taking a deposition. You know, you can take a deposition of an opposing party. A defendant can take the deposition of a plaintiff. A plaintiff can take the deposition of a defendant. You know, you can take a deposition of a witness. So let's say like a doctor, you got a personal injury case and, you know, a doctor, you don't want to bring a doctor to court. You always take his deposition because that way, you know, it can be done at this very specific time. You know, they're not going to be sitting around in a witness room waiting for a couple hours to be called as a witness. You know, you take their deposition. Now, a deposition is this, you know, you start it, you know, you formally file some pieces of paper inside the lawsuit that give notice of, you know, like you're wanting to take a deposition. And once you give notice that you're going to take a deposition and designate the party you're going to depose, let's say you're the plaintiff and you're going to take the deposition of the defendant. Well, you file a piece of paper, you know, noting that you're going to be taking the deposition of the defendant. Of course, you're going to need to contact the other side, find out when would be a good time for that, you know, because it's always best to take care of these matters in advance. And then you line up a court reporter. And then you show up at some office, designated place for the taking of the deposition. And then in a deposition, you'll have a court reporter there. You know, the lawyers for the parties will be there. Let's say that you're the plaintiff or you're the lawyer for the plaintiff, and you're taking the deposition of the defendant, you give the notice of that. You're going to be taking the deposition in, you know, the lawyer's office. You're going to have a court reporter there. And once you start, you get to ask questions just like in court. And the court reporter is going to take it down. And that's what's called a deposition. Now, other things you can do within discovery is you can send written instead of taking a deposition, you can send interrogatories, meaning you can sit down and type out some questions you want to ask of a party and send it to them. And they've got to answer typically within 30 days. Those are called interrogatories. I see the rule 33 interrogatories to parties. Plus, by means of discovery, you know, like rule 34, you can ask for the production of documents. So, you know, this is generally what is known as discovery. And all of these things, like, you know, framing of a lawsuit, you know, what you have to plead by means of a lawsuit, you know, the parties, it can be a party to a lawsuit, you know, these are matters governed by the rules. Discovery, taking depositions, you know, getting permission to go on land, you know, sending interrogatories, request for production of documents, all that stuff is governed by the rules. Now let's go on down a little bit further, Joe. Let's move down into the trial. Now, even trials are subject to rules. And, you know, you can say, I'm not going to, you know, here it is 5 to 9. Maybe we can touch on it a little part next week. But and these rules regarding trials, this is basically what you're going to do. You know, if a judge has set a case down for trial, you know, there's a procedure. There's an ordinary way that a case is tried. You show up in a trial in a courtroom. The plaintiff will be presenting its case first. You know, the first thing that's going to be happening, if you're going to have a jury trial, you got to pick the jury. And after you pick the jury, then you're going to have things like opening statements from the parties. And after opening statements, then the plaintiff will start presenting his case. And you do that by presenting the testimony of witnesses. And the witnesses can be either live witnesses in court, or if you've taken a deposition, you can have, you know, somebody, the lawyer can sit there in front of the jury and read the deposition, but most people are going to get somebody to pretend to be like the deponent, the party that was deposed. You're going to get somebody from your law office, the secretary, depending on the sex of the witness. You're going to put somebody on the stand, and the lawyer's going to read from the deposition, and the party that's sitting on the stand is going to read the answer from the deposition. You know, you've got to add a little bit more class, but you know, you don't have to do that. A lawyer could just there read from the deposition, but you're either going to have deposition testimony or you're going to have live witnesses. And after the plaintiff presents this case, then there's things known as, you know, making motions. Let's say that, you know, a party hasn't proven his case. Well, at the end of the proof submitted by the complaining party, the plaintiff, you know, you can move for judgments of acquittal. But then if a judge denies that, then you can, if you're a defendant, you start presenting the defense side of the case. Now, after all of the testimony is taken and submitted, at the end of the case, you know, the parties are going to give their closing arguments. And after you give the closing arguments, the judge is going to give a jury instruction, give the jury, if you got a jury, jury instructions. So that is generally the way. This has been a quick summary in less than an hour of what happens really in 30 minutes, you know, about how civil cases come about, you know, how they operate, you know, a real quick overview of what happens in civil litigation. And just like it's important today and for Americans to be conversant with, as I started off at the beginning of this evening session, talking about the constitutional principles of equal protection. You know, there you can see, you know, I think it's been explained to you, you know, this is a concept that is easy to understand, and you can sit there and see it in everyday life. You can see a constitutional violation. And the more you know about these things, you know, you can see them when they happen in American society. Now, one of the things that happens in American society is there are criminal trials and there are civil trials. And knowing something about both is real important if you want to be an informed American. And one of the ways that you can become an informed American, know a little bit more than your next door neighbor, is to sit down and just take some things like these rules and become, you know, not that you need to become a master of this subject, simply becoming familiar with the basic features is worthwhile, and it makes you to be an educated American. You know, one of the things that I think is a real problem in American society today is I just see the educational system falling apart. And to me, education is really important. You know, if you have an educated society, it's a lot more difficult for tyranny to gain a foothold. A tyranny can gain a foothold when the people in a society are ignorant. And this is the reason why I think it's real important for Americans to become conversant with law. We need Americans that know something about, you know, our Constitution, state and federal. You know, I'm familiar with the Alabama Constitution. I'm familiar with a lot of principles in other states' constitution, but I'm not a master of Missouri's Constitution like I am Alabama's Constitution. But I do think that whatever state you live in, look at your Constitution. And all Americans need to become familiar with the federal Constitution. And, you know, we're sitting here today, we're going through this political theater of Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi, and, you know, they're pulling some shenanigans. And if you're familiar with provisions of the United States Constitution, you know, my good friend, Mo Brooks, you know, he made news today, you know, the number of members of the House were irritated at what's going on in that Schiff room at the bottom of the Capitol, where Schifty is conducting his hearings. You know, these congressmen went down there to the basement and they wanted to crash it. And from what I can tell, they did crash it. But, you know, Mo kind of was asked by one of these CNN reporters, you know, about, well, gee, this witness we've got today said thus and such in his opening statement. And Mo just gave him both barrels of his shotgun. We need Americans that are on a level to understand. Yeah, there's Mo. He and I used to be on the Republican Executive Committee here in Madison County decades ago. Then he became the DA here in Madison County. Then he went on up to, he was a state legislator, and now he's our congressman. And he's on the right. He was one of the guys out there on the baseball field a couple of years ago when the mad Democrat, you know, that guy from, I forgot where he was from, started shooting up, hit Steve Scalise. You know, Mo was out there on the field. He administered first aid to Steve Scalise. Mo's a good guy. But, you know, we need people to understand what is going on in America. And if you want to understand what's going on in America, you know, having a good working knowledge of law is real important. But I see the people that want to practice tyranny here in America are the people like Shifty and Pelosi. They don't want people to know something about law. They don't want people to be educated. Tyrants want compliant idiots. Well, I don't want compliant idiots to be my friends here in America. I want them to be people who have a good working knowledge of law, and particularly knowledge of the fundamentals, the constitutions that, govern, that control, you know, our governments. But then in addition to that, I think you need to understand that, you know, the forces of tyranny, you know, manifest themselves in the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. And there's a couple of planks of those Communist Manifestos, you know, that I address the harms of those planks of the Communist Manifesto on our website. And I think it's real important for people to understand, you know, the problems created by plank number 2 and plank number 5 of the Communist Manifesto. Now, Joe, it's after 9 o'clock my time. We took a little bit more than an hour. I don't know whether we need to open up the floor for questions.
I had invited a couple, three times throughout the show, anybody that wanted to chat a question. There's been a few comments. Do you have any comment, Larry, about jurisdiction in terms of, isn't it the case that it's supposed to be, you can raise jurisdiction at any time, but in your experience, is jurisdiction or questioning jurisdiction a real something that judges don't like, or does it?
Well, jurisdiction can be kind of a complex, but it can also be kind of something simple. I can remember back in, you know, the early 80s, you know, I was running around with some people in Salt Lake City, Billy Murdoch, and, you know, we were digging into jurisdiction. You know, to me, there were a number of people in the movement that didn't know anything about jurisdiction. You know, I understood that, but I perceived that there was a real need for there to be some education about jurisdiction. So I sat down, and this is still over on my website, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, jurisdiction. I wanted to teach people about your legislative jurisdiction of the federal government. And, you know, not only is there legislative jurisdiction of the federal government, but there's reasons why things have to be within the legislative jurisdiction of the United States, but then things that are not, you know, necessarily tied to that jurisdiction. And those are real important principles. You know, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, jurisdiction, which is explained over on my website. And there's also a 1957 government report on that very issue. Yeah, there you go. That's, you know, you can have summaries of cases and links to the cases on this page of my website. And also that government report in 1956, 1957, there's links to it there on John Rowland's Constitution Society website. But, you know, what I did learn is that, you know, we had, you know, here we were doing that, and, you know, 5 and 6 years later, a lady by the name of Lynn Meredith comes along, and, you know, oh, she's going to promote it as a simplistic little argument. And, you know, Lynn Meredith came along and presented, you know, she had this little book, you know, that dealt with the these principles of jurisdiction. And, you know, she went out on the circuit. And she got a lot of people interested because, you know, she was a hustler, a promoter. And she taught people some basic, simplistic things. And people came to the conclusion that all I have to do is what Lynn's told me. And she got into trouble. And a lot of people that were her students got into trouble. So, you know, it's real important for people to understand something about these principles. But once you begin to understand these principles, they can evolve into something that's kind of complex. And there is where you need to really sit down and contemplate. If you're going to do something in court, you better really plan what you're going to do. But most people, they have no conception, you know, well, gee, I got some problem. I'm just going to run to court. You know, I'm going to roll out, you know, my issue. And that's the way, that's what happened with wages, not income. You know, back in the early 80s, wages, not income, that was a good issue. But, you know, it was promoted in a very simplistic fashion. And a lot of the meat of that argument, and I guess this is something we could discuss in a later program. You know, there was a lot that was late that simply wasn't raised. And so we had a good issue destroyed because we had a bunch of people that were unprepared, didn't know what they were doing. They went to court and raised these issues, and now we got a ton of adverse precedents out there. So, you know, this is the reason why I'm an advocate of people, the American people, having a good American freeman's understanding and knowledge of law, constitutional and statutory. That is critical. If we have that, then we can increase freedom in America. If we don't have educated Americans that know something about law, then we're going to end up being a completely enslaved communist society, which is what your AOCs and Tlaib and Elizabeth Warren and, you know, all those fruitcakes, what they want.
Tell us how you really feel, Larry.
Well, I can't do that, Joe. It
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to cut it off here. We appreciate everybody joining us. Let's just do a little housekeeping quickly.
I want to tell our listeners we're going to be back next week. And, you know, we need to get some people listening to these programs, because your objective, my objective, is to educate people about fundamental legal principles. And we're going to be teaching fundamental legal principles. You don't have to know much about law. The purpose of you coming and listening to this program is so you can begin to know something. You can learn something. And we're here to do that teaching. And that's the reason why we need to get some more people tuning in.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to commend everybody because I've been asking for weeks that everyone go to the radio show section of my website and look for the links to all the past shows. You see here on the blue links is where I actually do have links, all the old shows. And the bottom line is that Brighteon.com, where a lot of these shows are placed, has a limit and an uploading limit of videos. And so I just want to let everybody know that thanks to you, I was able to go from the 50 video limit to the 100 video limit a couple days ago. So I've got another 53 videos that I can upload thanks to you watching the videos, showing them to others. And, then hopefully as you show them to others, people want to join us live in conformity to what Larry's talking about. You know, actually have people join us for our live presentations. And so anyway, I want to thank everybody, congratulate everybody.
Charlie Harmon has a message here. Charlie, go over to not to this website. Don't go over to Dixieland Law Journal. Go over to LarryBcraft.org. My phone number's on that website. Call me tomorrow. I'll be here. I'm just doing briefs tomorrow.
Okay, well, that's a nice offer for Larry to Charlie. Peter's asking, Joe, is there a way to store these shows and their video content that does not depend on Pratheon or whatever? Oh, Brighteon is .com. I don't know. If anybody has any other platforms, I'm certainly willing to look at them. What I like about Brighteon.com, it was founded by Mike Adams. And he, you know, they don't censor, you know, I guess as long as they're clean language and that kind of thing, which we practice here. So anybody's welcome to chime in, you know, email me at my website if you have any other ideas. But, you know, I do like it that they can't ban any of the videos. I trust Mike will not ever do that. So anyway, hopefully that answers your question, Pete. Anybody can chime in with other ideas, other places to put these videos. But for the time being, I've got another 50 videos that I can upload until we're back to a limitation. So let's see. Just wanted to go over the host contacts. You wouldn't believe the stuff that I've got open on here. I'd have to manage around, but that's part of the fun. So just quickly, you know, Larry, as we've shown you many times, you can go to startpage.com or duckduckgo.com. We do not use or like Google. Type in Bcraft Briefs or Dixieland Law Journal, that will take you to Larry's site that we show pretty much every show, and there's so much material there. Sean O'Connor, you can go to seanoconnor.org or freeenterprisesocietyservices.org. Our co-host Gary Thomason, he gives you his email address, gary@npn.net. And my website is agentfortruth.com. And that's about all the house cleaning that I have.
I'll come back next week.
Yeah, very good. All right, everybody. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.